I have to tell you, I was really grateful to get Bruce's request to preach this morning. A couple of reasons. Seems like he actually trusts me to have a conversation with you, and that's a good thing. I mean, you know, when you know people and respect people and they toss the ball back to you, that's kind of nice. But more truthfully, more honestly, I felt like it's something I could do. I mean, as you heard, I formally retired in January, and it's just not sitting well with me. One day I was working, and the next day I wasn't. I remember when my dad retired. He did it twice. And I remember being really hard on him, kind of judgy about his unhealthy, you know, identity being tied up with his capacity to earn a living. Well, I've been thinking a lot about him these past 6 months. Turns out, no one tells you about the grief, the letting go, the absolute identity shift, and the anxiety that comes with all of that. I used to happily say, I'm a preacher, and that landed really well in my body. Now these new words, I'm retired, they just don't feel like me. And mostly when I spend any time thinking about this, I'm uncertain. I feel scared and anxious, and you know, I have a whole new appreciation for my dad's experience. I don't know whether you folks have gone through any of this in your retirements. Maybe you sailed through it like it was falling off a log or something. But maybe there's other people who know exactly what I'm talking about or are going through it right now. We should form a support group. A club. Now, I do know that as a congregation, you've gone through lots of identity changes and shifts in the past 30 years. I was a student minister in Isuyus when I first heard about Gilmore Park United Church in the late 90s. You see, the real effects of congregational decline first talked about in the 70s and the 80s were having a real effect on little places like Isuyus. And members of the church council really skewered me, and they really wanted this new upstart young student minister with his young family to do something about the congregation's dwindling family count. The congregation's numbers swelled in January, February, and March, because all those snowbird Canadians who can't afford health insurance in the United States would come to Isuyus. It's cheaper there. So while the congregation swelled, those weren't young families, not by a long shot. So the council had heard about Gilmore Park United and was really impressed by how you had transformed your property to create an income source. Now, the council thought, from my council's perspective, Gilmore Park United was the poster child for how to reinvent yourself as a congregation. How many people were here at that time? Quite a few of you. There's a handful over here, but not so. The old folks are here and the new folks are here, right? Is that true? That's not true. But lots of you were here, right? You knew what you went through, right? It was tormenting, anxiety-provoking. Can we really do this? It was to produce an income stream and bring the young families back. Sort of. Help us pay for us doing what we continue to do. See, right? And how'd that work out for you? Would you call yourselves the poster child of the congregation reinventing yourselves? Would you say that? Or are you continuing to feel the anxiety of trying to be church again, continuing to be church in a culture that's changing all around us? We're still doing that, right? We're still anxious. It's a question we're all asking ourselves, so take heart. How do we do church now? I'm thinking about Bruce's conversation with us last week, when, as he recounted the church's historic collusion with slavery and racism, and frankly, every other ism. How do we be church differently with that legacy stuck to us, like here? And it's stuck there, and it's not nice to look at, especially now in these days of trying to do reconciliation and the legacy of residential schools all around us. How do we be church? At the annual meeting of Pacific Mountain Region in June, our guest speaker was Jackie Lewis. Jackie Lewis is a beautiful 60-year-old Black woman from New York City who'd founded a church 20 years earlier. And she was brilliant. And she said, with Western religion entwined with empire and white supremacy, we need to liberate Jesus. And I thought about, and I know I'm not the only one who had this picture. You remember the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus standing at the door, the picture of the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, the perfect arch, and he's holding a lamp and he's knocking. Long, flowing blonde hair. That picture, gotta go. What kind of church do we need to be now? Gilmore Park United, now, in the middle of South and West Richmond. How do we liberate Jesus from white supremacy and empire in order for the gospel to be heard in brand new ways? We're all living with this question. And I believe that's exactly what's going on in the scripture that Bev read this morning. It's a familiar enough story, isn't it? There's a storm on the water, the disciples are afraid, and Jesus walks across it like he's strolling through the park. Easy. But we have to remember what Bev said before she read the text. Oh, I turned my phone off. I did. It's supposed to be on Do Not Disturb. Hang on just a minute. I did this. It's on. Do Not Disturb is on. That was my son calling from Northwest Territories, by the way. Anyway, let's remember that Jesus has helped 5,000 people, men, 5,000 men, in Matthew's gospel, feed off of 5 loaves and 2 fish. It's so interesting. 5,000 men, the women and children weren't counted this day. No idea why. Liberated from empire, Jesus has just helped 5,000 people experience what the new community, what God's kingdom will be like. No one goes hungry. No one goes without. And there's going to be 12 baskets left over. It's full of abundance in God's kingdom. But as Bruce reminded us last week, until we're all free, no one is free from empire. And Bev just shared with us the fallout from that glimpse of freedom. While Jesus goes up the mountain to commune with the mystery of the mountain, the disciples are left with a sea of emotional turmoil as they realize what they've just witnessed. Following this Jesus will mean renouncing everything they have ever understood about the culture in which they live. They've just witnessed a complete breakdown of empire and the freedom for people to be who they are and to have all they need in that new community, in God's kingdom. No one is forgotten. No one is set aside. No one is cast aside. No one is more privileged or less privileged than anybody else. Talk about anxiety provoking. Talk about identity shifting. Talk about living at the epicenter of a collision course with Rome, the heart of empire. Is there any wonder the storms are raging? Is there any wonder the seas are churning? Is there any wonder they can't sleep on the ship that used to take them to safe harbor? Nothing about this new identity, this new kingdom, is safe from that perspective, and yet nothing else feels more right, right? When you see it, it's like, oh, yeah, we want that. And Jesus simply walks across it all, across the torment, the raging, with complete trust in the God who called him. And we didn't hear this in this version of the Bible. The New Revised Standard Version says that Jesus says to Peter, take heart, be of good courage. That's what courage means. It comes from the French word for heart, cœur, courage, take heart. And as Peter gets a glimpse of this trust, he says to Jesus, Lord, is it you? If it is, command me to come to you. And Jesus says, it's I. So Peter gets out of the boat and begins to walk on this raging turmoil as well. But he gets scared. And this detail's not to be lost. He gets scared and begins to sink. This is how we can know this isn't a story about walking on water. Remember that jump into the pool off the diving board? I didn't begin to sink, I sank. Those first century followers, hearing this story, would have heard the word seas as something to be frightened of. It's chaotic and tormenting and churning. That's what seas are. This is not a story about walking on water. This is a story about trusting God. Sometimes we need to cry out. There's something, eh? We do get scared. And frankly, we're not at our best when we're scared, right? We just need to cry out. And look whose hand is always there. Jesus' hand is ever waiting to hold us. And then he says to Peter what he says to us. Why did you doubt? In these past 6 months, as I've tried to figure out what retirement will mean for me, my beloved has been watching me wait, wonder, whine a lot about what's to become of me. One morning, just before leaving for the office with me in a particular state of wacko, my beloved gave me that gentle, lovely look of affirmation and grace with that beautiful twinkle in his eyes. And he gave me a whack upside the head and said, "Do you trust this God you preach about? Do you actually trust this God? Don't you think that the universe needs a little time to arrange the stars and the seasons, people's lives and situations, in order for the next thing to present itself?" You of little faith, why did you doubt? God's got this, friends. The storms are going to come because we're working out how to be church, how to liberate Jesus in a whole new way. And that's creating anxious vibes for us. That's just happening. There is going to be a complete culture shift, which involves the freedom in God's kingdom that we're talking about. But trust means that Christ will see us through, and we are exactly where we're supposed to be. Please pray with me.